All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another fan talk with none other than Zach Jones in our continuing efforts to get multiple fan perspectives on the Falcons offseason as well as their upcoming 2018 season.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of Falcons.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, and, of course, the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at FalcFans. Today, I am joined for another fan talk as we strive to fill the summer doldrums of this offseason with talking to the fans, and this is, I think, now the third or fourth one that we've had since the draft. And we're probably going to talk quite a bit about the draft and sort of where it applies to the Falcons' upcoming season. We'll get a different perspective on that from Zach Jones. Zach, say hello to the listeners.
Hello, everybody. Excited to be here, be on with y'all.
Okay. So, Zach, before we get started, let the people know if you have any social media accounts at the top of the show, just so, you know, they know your credentials if they want to get in touch, and then we'll plug it again at the end of the episode as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we can talk some Falcons at ATL Zach Jones, and anything Falcons is normally all the thing I'll tweet about. But, yeah, anything Falcons related or talking trash, I'm all for it.
Yes. I've had quite a few interactions with Zach on Twitter, so you guys can definitely check him out there. So, Zach, I will give you the floor. You know, what do you want to talk about on today's fan talk?
I guess let's start from the top of the draft. I was kind of curious your thoughts on this. Is do you think the drafting of Calvin really had anything to do with Matt Ryan's contract? Do you think he was talking to ownership, or do you think it was solely best player available? Because, I mean, I can see both sides, but I can also see Matt Ryan coming in saying, if I'm signing here for the long haul, I want some more guys to throw to. Kind of had a down year last year, relatively speaking. But I was curious your thoughts on that right there.
I think, I don't think there's too much connecting Matt Ryan to this in sort of a direct way. I certainly think the Falcons looked at their offensive performance last season and came away disappointed, as I think most of us also did. And I think they sort of saw Calvin Ridley as a top-end talent, whether they saw him as a top 10, top 15, top 20 talent, you know, remains to be seen. But certainly I think they saw him as a player that probably should have gone a lot higher than what they, you know, where he wound up going. And I think they couldn't pass up on the value. And I also feel like they looked at that as, you know, I think it's more of a Sark move than, I guess, a Matt Ryan, if I was going to summarize it quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree, too. I was trying to see if they wanted to show Matt Ryan that they were invested in him and want to give him all the weapons. But, I mean, the thing about Ridley is I know he's going to translate well just to his due to running great routes. I'm an Auburn fan, went to Auburn and graduated from there, so I've watched him torch Auburn quite a few times with a terrible quarterback. I mean, just his route running, I feel like immediately will translate to the NFL. His speed is a little bit of a question, but I think nowadays it's more about quickness than pure speed, since everyone almost seems to have that pure speed. But I'm also curious to see where they're going to put him in the slot or more outside. It's kind of one of those I go back and forth about. I think him and Sanu are pretty interchangeable. I was wondering if you think he's going to be inside or outside more.
Well, I suspect this season he'll be more of an outside guy, just because I think Sanu has that slot on lock. I don't think, you know, some people think there's going to be a competition between Sanu and Ridley. I don't think that's really going to be the case at all. I think Sanu is pretty much locked in as the number two guy, and I think it's really more a competition of sort of how quickly Ridley transitions to be that number three guy, and it sort of determines how much, you know, of that 11 personnel, there's three wide receiver sets that the Falcons use this year, more so than a direct competition. I think Sanu's going to definitely be the starter. I think the interesting thing we'll have to watch, and at this point in time, I have no idea, is I suspect the Falcons will cross-train Ridley at both the X and the Z receiver spot. The X is the spot played by Julio Jones. The Z is the spot played by Sanu, as well as Hardy, primarily. Taylor Gabriel was more of an X when he was in the lineup. And that's where the Falcons, you know, the top backup X on the team right now is Marvin Hall. And I think that's really the spot where the Falcons are most vulnerable at in terms of their depth. But obviously, if Ridley's future, because Julio's got that X spot unlocked, is going to be at the Z position. So I'll be sort of curious to see what role he plays primarily in the preseason. Is he more of an X, or is he spending more time at the Z? Like, I noticed with Hardy, like, early on his rookie year, his rookie summer, when the expectation was he was going to play a lot in the slot, he really didn't play really at all in the slot that year. He was more playing as the backup to Roddy White at that Z spot. So I'll be interesting to sort of see how that plays out. And, you know, my suspicion is that they'll cross-train Ridley at both spots just because as a more immediate depth, they need him at the X. But long-term, his future is probably going to be at that Z spot. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty interesting. I mean, one of the things was when I was watching the draft, everyone pretty much all the way through, I could see, oh, I can see it, best player available. The one that confused me the most and kind of I didn't see the role that he was going to be playing was Gage, especially since we had signed Bethel. And we have Hardy already, and then we already got Smith that I think will end up being the returner, him or Ridley. Where do you think he fits in? I saw they're training him at corner. Where do you think he's going to fit in on offense or defense or special teams? Do you think he'll be the returner?
No, I think he has like return ability, but he doesn't have a lot of experience from what I know as a returner.
Okay.
Like I think his skill set translates. So it wouldn't shock me if he gets some reps there, but I think unless like we sort of see him just get some throwaway reps and takes one to the house, I don't think he's really sort of a serious competitor there. Just because the Falcons have so many other options available to have a little bit more experience, including some of the undrafted free agents and guys like Marvin Hall and Reggie Davis, who looked pretty good when they were returning kicks and punts last summer. So I don't really expect him to impact there. I think primarily they're going to pencil him in as the gunner on punt teams. And, you know, previously those were spots held by Justin Hardy and C.J. Goodwin last year. But then after the Seahawk game, they took Hardy off of special teams. My suspicion is because he was dealing with a shoulder injury or whatever he had off-season surgery on. So I think just sort of they dialed back his special teams reps. And pretty much for the rest of the season, Marvin Hall took over that spot. Then they, you know, once they cut C.J. Goodwin after the Vikings game, then it was Bleedy Ray Wilson playing the gunner spot. So I imagine the plan right now is for Justin Bethel to play that spot manned by Bleedy Ray Wilson as a gunner, engaged to play the spot manned by Marvin Hall, and probably on the depth chart, because if he wins that gunner spot, basically that guy's going to be the fifth wide receiver on the depth chart, even though he may not play a ton of offense. But I do think it's interesting with Gage at the cornerback position, just because he spent, what, 2 or 3 years at LSU playing cornerback? And when you look at his, like, tools, his sort of physical tools with his size and his length, like he has arms almost as long as Isaiah Oliver does. And Isaiah Oliver has some of the longest arms as a cornerback in the league. And I think when you look at sort of what Gage was as a wide receiver, which is a kind of a raw route runner, at least from what I've seen of him at LSU, and you know, basically you're going to have to teach him how to run routes in the NFL, which generally speaking is not necessarily not to say that you can't do that, but it's not necessarily something that you can expect to happen overnight. And so it wouldn't shock me at all if we do see him a little bit more at cornerback in the future, just because I think maybe his skills may translate a little bit better. And we've seen the team take wide receivers like C.J. Goodwin, as well as Deontay Burton, who was a wide receiver for the team last summer and is now working at cornerback, and try to convert those guys. So I do think long-term Gage might have a future as a cornerback. But for this year, I think purely it's a special teams player.
I mean, I was looking at roles that I could see players possibly filling, and the one that I'm probably the most confused on would have to be the free safety. I looked at Gage and thought with his tackling ability that he might be placed there, or Casey, and then I also can see Poole. And the thing is, each one of them is missing a certain aspect, whether it be speed, tackling, zone coverage ability. Who do you think right now Casey's the backup?
Yeah, I think Casey's going to be the backup. I think Poole is sort of their emergency in the event of multiple injuries at that spot. Break the glass in case of emergency type of third free safety there. They picked up Chris Lammons from South Carolina, who sort of fits there. He's probably, I think he's the last undrafted free agent that I have yet to watch. So, you know, I won't go too far on that one because I just haven't seen enough of him play. But, like, I think really when you look at this free safety spot in this scheme, it's more of a mental position than a physical position. I think that's one of the things that people get wrong about Ricardo Allen in thinking that he doesn't necessarily live up to his potential, and that's why guys like Kazee and Poole, who aren't these world-class athletes, are effective there. You know, it's more of a position where you have to understand the angles and understand routes and all these sorts of things more from the neck up than necessarily having great range and speed. If you have great range and speed, that's obviously wonderful. That's a bonus. Like, I think a lot of people look at a guy like Earl Thomas and say, oh, he's one of the fastest safeties in the league, and that's why he's so good. And it's like, no, Earl Thomas is one of the most instinctual safeties in the NFL. Plus, he's fast, which is the what takes him from being a, you know, a really good safety to a future Hall of Famer. But he would still be a really good safety if he ran a 4.6 as opposed to the 4.35 or whatever his speed was when he came out of Texas. So I think the Falcons' depth at the free safety position is pretty secure between Poole, Kazee, and Allen. To me, I think the bigger questions are at that strong safety spot where they don't really have a guy other than really Kazee to play that spot. Because it was interesting last year when Neal got hurt and when Allen was sort of Kazee looked a little bit more comfortable playing closer to the line of scrimmage just because he doesn't quite have the instincts yet that you want at that free safety position because he's transitioning from an outside corner. Maybe we see growth this summer. I'm expecting it. You saw flashes of it, but just during the regular season, you just see a ton of it. And so I do think even though he doesn't have the classic build that you look for as a strong safety at that spot, I do think if Neal was to go down, Kazee would be the guy that they would plug into that spot potentially just because he seems to be at least more comfortable playing closer to the line of scrimmage than some of the other options that they have behind you.
Yeah, that's the one thing good about this Dan Quinn era is that when you see them draft players, most of the time you can see right where they fit, exactly how they're going to be used, which is something that during the Mike Smith era, it kind of just seemed like it was they were just evaluating prospects and just trying to get him in, and then they wouldn't play. So that's Dan Quinn can get 6-round rookies starting on a Super Bowl team. It's just nothing that we haven't seen before, something we haven't seen before. So it's nice change, and it's refreshing and kind of making me realize that I'm a little spoiled talking to a bunch of Dallas Cowboy fans, realizing that, you know, we're a little spoiled with that past almost 2 drafts now with Tack playing well, that we can actually trust this coaching staff, that they have a plan, that they obviously know more than we do, even though sometimes I think that I would be a better general manager. Sometimes that's not the case, but it's refreshing to have a plan and see the plan come into action and actually see the actual results from players.
Yeah, I definitely have more to add to that. I want to come back and cover it, but I do want to plug LockedOnSports.com, the one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content dealing with the NFL, NBA, as well as Major League Baseball. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Yeah, Zach, I think you nailed it. I think, you know, I've caught a little bit of flack by saying things like, you know, I don't know if Dan Quinn's developing talent quite to the degree that he often gets credited to. But I think the one area where I will give Dan Quinn a lot of credit is he does a really excellent job fitting pieces together, if not necessarily turning players into stars. I think he turns players, you know, into good players, obviously. But I think he really understands, you know, particularly in contrast to a guy like Mike Smith and how the team was run then, because you would see with the Mike Smith regime, like one year they would take a, like particularly it was prevalent on the offensive line where they would take a guy one year that was a really good fit in a man blocking scheme, and the following year they would take a guy that's a good fit in a zone blocking scheme. And it, you know, it just didn't mesh because they were just sort of not really drafting for a scheme. They were more drafting like high effort, energy, high character guys that were okay athletes, but were more like effort and energy and work ethic guys and necessarily like premium athletes. And you didn't always get a mesh with the sort of marrying fits with the scheme. And I think that sort of skewed the perception where particularly as longer the Mike Smith regime wore down, that people were like, oh, they're not developing talent. And it's like, well, they are developing talent. They just don't have talent. You know, it's like that guy, you know, like yeah. Akeem Dent is a seventh. Yeah. Like, you know, those guys are late round undrafted talents and they live up to their talent. It's just the problem is they're drafting these guys way ahead of when they should be drafted. And I think the difference between Dan Quinn is understanding, you know, like you look at guys like Devondre Campbell or Vic Beasley or whatever, these supreme athletes that, you know, have improved somewhat since coming in the league, but not to the degree that I think, you know, a lot of people sort of perceive. But because they fit so well with the scheme and they're targeting specific types of athletes that fit in the scheme, they don't necessarily need to get, you know, take a guy and turn a Devondre Campbell into the, you know, an Anthony Barr type of player. He doesn't need to be that good because the way that they fit the scheme together and it's more of a putting puzzle pieces together, I think that's really where the brilliance of Dan Quinn, particularly in contrast to the Mike Smith regime.
In your opinion, where do you think Vic Beasley ends up? And in the end of his career, later on in his career, do you think he's an 8-sack guy? Because I watch him just about every snap or try to, him or Tack or Grady in the middle. And it's almost, if he doesn't win off that initial first step, he kind of just jukes side to side and gets kind of stuck in no man's land. I agree with you completely about not developing players because it's almost like he hasn't developed at all. I wouldn't say at all, but there's no second move that you've always been talking about. The power, I've seen him in person quite a few times, and I don't think you could put another inch of pound of muscle on the guy. So it's like he doesn't have the functional power. So where do you think he needs to be, or where do you think he'll end up in his career? Do you think he's a 5-sack guy, more like a Bruce Irvin? I remember when he came out, you called it right off the bat that he was more of a Bruce Irvin than a Von Miller. Do you think he's a 5-sack guy, a nice complementary piece to a primary pass rusher?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I think this is going to be a make break season because I think this is the year where Vic Beasley needs to show. Like, I think of him more as a 6-to-8-sack guy, which is in that sort of Bruce Irvin mm-hmm. range. I don't know. Like, I look at Vic Beasley, and this is part of the reason why I like him as a linebacker so much. I think if he played in a pure 3-4 scheme that asked him to rush the quarterback, drop in the coverage, play the run, do all the things that sort of a class, like basically the same way that the Steelers use TJ Watt, I think he would be really good in that scheme. Even if he wasn't necessarily this monster sack artist in that scheme, I think he could do a lot of the other things that you want a 3-4 outside linebacker to do. I think the problem is in Atlanta, they have asked him purely to be a pass rusher, which he's good at, but he's not amazing at. And I think there's a lot of pressure on him to be amazing at it. And I think this year is going to be interesting because if he doesn't have this really big season, and I think I've gone on record elsewhere and said basically like looking at the schedule and looking at him lining up that left defensive end and some of the matchups he's going to face, he should have little to no problem if he's any good, you know, to get like 50 or 60 pressures this year, which should translate into, you know, 10 or so sacks. And if he can't get to that number this year, assuming he's healthy, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's a chance that the Falcons basically going into his contract year in 2019, in his fifth year, like, they'll basically like, okay, well, he's not like, if like, let's say hypothetically, he only has like 6.5 sacks this year. I don't think the Falcons will feel as compelled to keep him as a pure defensive end in 2019, and then they might move him back to more of that hybrid linebacker role like a Bruce Irvin, and sort of see what they can get and then draft another edge rusher to sort of be the long-term replacement across from Tack and sort of see if Vic Beasley has a good year as a full season and a full offseason as a linebacker and has a good year doing that, then they might be willing to pay him, you know, a decent contract, but probably not like top-end pass rusher money. So I don't know, like a lot sitting here today, it's hard to know what's going to happen. I could see multiple scenarios, or, you know, I could see Vic Beasley having 13 sacks this year or something like that and something ridiculous and then earning that sort of monster contract. But it's tough to sit here right now. It really sort of depends on him developing a better array of moves. Cause I think you nailed it when you say, like, basically if he doesn't win off of the first step, he's not really going to win. And that really was problematic more last year because I think offensive tackles really started to adjust to the fact that that's Absolutely. Basically how he could only win.
If you had a bet right now, who do you think has more sacks, Tack or Vic?
I would say Tack. I would say Tack.
Okay.
But I feel like
he can go speed or power.
Yeah, I feel like Tack has a wider array of tools in his arsenal. But I could also see, like, the weird thing about Vic Beasley is, like, you look at, like, his last, like, 11 or 12 sacks, like, all but, like, maybe two or three of them have been, like, cleanup sacks where he's just sort of chasing down quarterbacks. So, like, he just yeah. finds a way of getting – racking up these sacks when he just basically, like – when the quarterback steps up in the pocket and he just loops around and tackles him from behind or whatever. And so like he could get like 15 sacks this year and like 10 of them be cleanup sacks and Tack may only have eight, but only like two of them are cleanup sacks. So it's more like, I don't know. It's weird that way. So like, that's why I was a little hesitant to necessarily go all in on Tack saying he will have more sacks just because Vic Beasley has this knack to get a lot of those sort of sacks, you know, cover sacks and whatnot.
Like Vic Beasley's first sack was a quarterback running out a yard behind the line of scrimmage. I believe it was. I think it was a Cam. I can't remember who it was, but I remember looking at the stat sheet the next morning, seeing that he had a sack, and it kind of blew my mind. But and he also he has the potential to absolutely dominate a matchup, but then he can also get completely shut down. Whereas I see Tack being able to, no matter the matchup, he has a way he can win or at least generate pressure, whether it be through power. And he's got long arms, and you can see it too, or by speed.
Yeah, I agree with you.
One thing about that is, do you know how Clay Matthews is used in Green Bay, where he rushes up the middle? Do you think that's something they'd ever use with Tack, just because he's got the long arms and power and speed? Or is that something that you don't – I don't see Dan Quinn going away using that, though.
I think it would be interesting, because I think when you look at the four best pass rushers the Falcons have currently on the roster, it's – you know, in various order, Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, Tack McKinley, and Brooks Reed. And I think if you want to get your four best pass rushers on the field, so one of those guys is going to have to kick inside. And I think Tack is the guy that has has the best skill set because of the length, because of the power. And so he can just sort of bully guards more so like, you know, Brooks Reed's basically his, you know, we could accuse Vic Beasley of being a one note pass rusher all the time, but Brooks Reed's kind of the same way, but Brooks Reed's one though is that spin move. Yeah. And you need space for that to pull that off. So he's better on the outside than necessarily. And the good thing about Brooks Reed is like that spin move is sort of a counter move built into one. So it's like his one move is a counter move. So it's sort of a little bit more effective than just being a pure speed guy, or at least more effective than Vic Beasley being a pure speed. Cause John Abraham, quote unquote, was a pure speed guy. Most of his sacks came rushing the outside. But, you know, when John Abraham wanted to go through you, he could, as Joe Thomas can attest to and Jake Long can attest to. I don't know. Like, I feel like Tack, like I saw a couple of times where Tack did that at UCLA, kicked inside and was kind of effective in that role. And I think we could see that some this year. I don't know if we'll see it a ton this year. So it'll be interesting to sort of see whether or not Deidre Sinnott or Jack Crawford sort of step up and start pushing Brooks Reed out of that spot to be the fourth best pass rusher. Because if not, then I do think kicking Tack inside a little bit and sort of using him as a quasi-Michael Bennett type of player makes a lot of sense.
I mean, are you buying the Campbell pass rush ability at all? Because I see flashes of it, and I don't know what to make of it. He's got length, he's got speed, but it's weird. I go back and forth on it. I can see it, but then at the same time, you have better options in that same position.
Yeah, no, I think Campbell's pass, like, because he was a defensive end when he was a junior college player. So, like, you see, I think you're right. Flashes are, like, you see the power from time to time. Like, it's just not developed. I think that's the main thing. Like, if he really worked at it, and spending off season, you know, doing Krav Maga or working on his hands or whatever, the MMA stuff that players do, I think he'd be a lot more effective. But because his primary role is coverage, is playing the run, it's not that important of him to improve it as a skill, even though it certainly would enhance his value to the team if he became a lot more effective, and certainly if it meant the Falcons were dialing up more five-man and six-man pressures. because he was a very effective pass rusher, coming off the edge or blitzing through the interior with his speed. He is effective as a blitzer. He was very effective. I think he was like top 10, top 15 among outside linebackers last year in terms of his pressure rate, according to Pro Football Focus. So, like, he's good at it. It's just, you're right, I think it's more flashes than consistent.
Okay, I got another question for you. Who is your most overrated and underrated players on the Falcons?
Ooh.
I got to know this.
Okay, all right. Well, let me answer that in the bit, but I do want to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. If you guys haven't been keeping up with them since the draft and since they've been covering the grading all the teams' draft, all 32 teams' NFL drafts, you can check out their redrafts of the 2014 and 2015 drafts in recent weeks, where they go back and look at those two drafts and repick the picks. So check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with hosts Trevor Sikkema and John Ledyard, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, so now that I have a little bit more time to think about it, like, I mean, look, Vic Beasley's the easiest answer for the most overrated player, but yeah. Now I feel like the pendulum has kind of swung back a little bit so that he's not that overrated. Yeah. The player I think I had at the end of last year was none other than Devondre Campbell, just because, like, he's still very inconsistent as a run defender, a little bit too inconsistent, but that's just my own personal hang up. So, like, if I wasn't going to pick one of those two, I'm trying to think who else would I pick? I mean, look, you know me, I'm going to pick Mohamed Sanu. I'm just going to pick all the players.
I knew it.
No.
it hurts me inside when you say that.
Underrated? I feel like there's so many Falcon players that are now underrated just because it's so wishy-washy with the fan base, like who is good and who isn't. Like, you know, how did Desmond Trufant become underrated? Like, that makes no sense to me.
I don't know.
Like now, like he's one of the most underrated players in the team because people suddenly think he's garbage, and it's like why, like how, like yeah, he had a down year.
I feel the same way about Allen.
Absolutely, like there's
people hated. I was just saying it started off he's the starter, he played great, he's an up and coming player too. He's trash. We need to trade for Thomas. We need to draft a free safety. Last year they wanted Buda Baker in the first round. It goes back and forth, and it's hard to keep up with it. I love Allen personally, but I got to know this overrated. I mean, they're underrated. It does go back and forth like Vic Beasley. I totally agree with you on that one.
I don't know, man. It's tough to, like, because it feels like every 6 months it changes. And, like, I mm-hmm. sit here, and, like, 6 months from now, I'm going to be like, man, Devondre Campbell's so underrated because he's, like, really great this year. Or, you know, Mohamed Sanu because of all the plays that Ridley and Jones are making, he's going to eat up those single coverages in the slot and whatever, and he's going to suddenly become underrated, at least by me, certainly not by the fan base. I don't know, man. Like, it's tough to pick that. It's just, it goes back and forth so often. I feel like there's, like, six guys that are underrated. I feel like there's only a couple of guys. Like, I feel like we're not overrating players quite as much as we used to. But yeah, like I feel like most of the guys that are overrated are really rated by most people. I just think a couple of people take it a little bit too far with the Mohamed Sanu hype. I think a couple of people take it a little bit too far with the Devondre Campbell. But it's only a handful of people that are really pushing that. And so I think most people sort of like know what those guys are and don't really like think they're like, oh, this guy's the most amazing player in the history of the world. It's just like, yeah, he's good. He's fine, you know. And so I don't know. It's a tough question to answer.
Like mine has to be Neal. I mean, first of all, I love Keanu Neal, favorite player on the Falcons, and just watching him lay the boom on Saints. Remember that Willie Snead hit just made me just happy all over. But I feel like he's completely underrated. As in, I almost think he's better than Deion Jones, just in his reliability, ability to cover tight ends, and his presence that how hard he hits. If you watch him hit. In that Jets game at the end of the game, I forget, I think it was Jenkins or someone caught a ball in the air and he hit him right in the ribs, and then he was false started and the game was over. So he's my underrated, but overrated, I'm going to have to – what do you think about Coleman being overrated? I think – I feel like his production can be – I mean, they're different players, but Ito Smith can replace him. I feel like the hype behind him about how much money he's going to get is a little overrated as – I don't think he's a full workhorse back at all. He's a great complimentary, but I don't see it on the starter full load carry back at all.
That's a fair statement. I wouldn't fight you on that. I do think in some ways he's kind of underrated, but like again, you're right. I think there's a lot of ways that he's a little overrated. I don't know. The interesting thing about Tevin Coleman is going to be if he leaves Atlanta, who signs him and how they use him. Because I think a little bit of why sort of maybe the pendulum has swung back a little bit against Tevin Coleman is due to the change in offensive coordinator. Like I think Kyle Shanahan knew how to maximize, particularly in the passing game. And how often were we complaining about why isn't Tevin Coleman getting targets in the passing game? Why aren't we throwing the ball to our running backs last year? So I feel like
until Denver.
Yeah, I feel like last year Coleman didn't live up to his full potential, but I don't know if that's because he's overrated. I think a little bit of that is the play calling, not to, again, blame everything on Sark, but I do think, at least in terms of his value in the passing game, I feel like we didn't get the maximum out of him that we could have gotten. But I'm totally with you on Keanu. I think he's probably, I think other than probably Matt Ryan, he's arguably the most consistent player on the entire team. Maybe Alex Mack would go on that list as well, just from on a snap-to-snap basis.
Is he the best safety or best strong safety in the league or top five, if you put him top five?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's – I mean, I guess technically Harrison Smith is a free safety. So, like, only really Harrison Smith and Cam Chancellor are the guys that I – that at the top of my head that I would put, like, are his type of safety – that really jump out ahead of him, but with Chancellor's career basically being over and Smith technically being a free safety more than a strong safety, I wouldn't fight anybody that says Keanu Neal is the best strong safety in the league. You know, I personally think Derwin James might surpass him in time because I'm a big Derwin James fan. But you know, if Keanu Neal's only the top three, that's still really great. And to continue on what you're saying, like I really do feel like everybody in our secondary is underrated because I really do feel like people don't really appreciate how good our secondary is and how effective it is. It's sort of, I think it's the reason why the defense has been ascending over the last year or two. And absolutely, it's really the foundation for the defense's success more so than a front seven. The front seven certainly makes the big splash plays with the sacks and then Deion Jones doing his thing as well as Campbell and others. But like, I really feel like the foundation of this Falcons defense is built in that secondary, and I really feel like with the addition of Oliver, with Poole and Casey and Neal and Trufant and Alfred and all these guys, like I really think the seven guys we have back there, you know, are really second to none in this league.
I agree. I think it's just the fact that the turnovers weren't there this past year, so. From a stats, when your ESPN talks about it and people looking at it, they don't see all the interceptions, all the flashy plays while you see sacks from the D-line. But I think at the end of the day, that is the strongest part of our defense, without a doubt. Between Trufant had, by his standards, I guess you could say, a down year, while I think Oliver played really well last year. And I think with Oliver coming in too, I think that makes that safety, that or at least that secondary – just one of the best in the league, maybe behind Denver. It'll be interesting to see how they use Oliver, where they use him, and how much they use him. Because I could see them using him to cover tight ends. And it's nice, it's refreshing to see. Technically, we have four guys, you know, Campbell, Jones, Neal, and now Oliver that can all cover tight ends for years when it was third and 15, you just know it was going to be down the middle tight end reception. So Paul Warlow scrambling, eating dust, you know, but it's refreshing to see like, oh yeah, this guy could throw cover tight end, throw him on the tight end. You know, it's refreshing to not have to worry always about these mismatches, which is where I think the NFL is going in the tight end position, just having extreme mismatches that no one can match. And I think Dan Quinn's gotten ahead of the curve by loading up with these players that are versatile, that can guard receivers, running backs, and also at the same time, you know, huge 6'8" tight ends, which is it's refreshing to see and know that we're not going to have an obvious weakness coming up here soon.
Yeah,
I think run defense.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned Keanu. I think he's very underrated in terms of his coverage abilities because when he gets beat, it's obvious because you know what that tends to happen when the safety gets beat. But I do feel like on a consistency standpoint, it's kind of like Trufant in a lot of ways, where like when Trufant gets beat, you know, it's a big play or whatever, and it causes people to sort of, you know, overinflate how bad he is just because like one, and this, it was the same thing with Alford a couple of years ago when he would give up those penalties and it was like, oh, Alford just gave up a 40-yard play because he got a pass interference or whatever. He's terrible. And it's like, yeah, that's literally the only time he got beat in that entire game. You know, he played 16,
I was on that thing.
You know, five or so plays. So like 99% of the time he was good. And I think Keanu Neal's in that same boat. And I think Desmond Trufant in that same boat. And I really do feel like those three guys in particular, in terms of our ability to match up one-on-one in man coverage, really against any wide receiver core out there in the league and hold our own, not necessarily shut those guys down. But I don't think it's been a long time since I've watched the Falcons go into a game and really is concerned about those three guys in the matchup. I think maybe the Patriots game with Gronk was like the last time I was like, oh, because Gronk is Gronk. But other than that, but I think Keanu Neal did a pretty decent job on the few occasions he got to line up against Gronk. I think the interesting thing about that game in particular is the Falcons basically rotated like five guys trying to cover Gronk in that game, as opposed to just putting one guy on him, which I think, again, is a testament to our coaching staff, not necessarily putting all that pressure on one guy. But yeah, I just think, you know, particularly the secondary, I think it's a very underrated unit. And you see that epitomized with sort of some of the slander that, you know, our two safeties and our two cornerbacks get quite a bit. And even, you know, Brian Poole is a guy that we've been critical of, at least I have been critical of over the last several months on this, in this podcast during the off season, but I still feel like he's a really good player. And it's just like certain matchups are problematic for him, I think. And when I have concerns about the secondary and their ability to match up, it's more because, oh, this is one of those matchups where I think Brian, like against the Eagles and Nelson Aguilar, like I don't think that's a good matchup for Brian Poole. But like outside of those matchups, and I think now that we got Oliver in the mix, like I don't feel like there's going to be as many of those instances anymore. So yeah, long story short, I think the secondary is really, really good.
Me too. We just need, the D-line worries me a little bit, but I think it'll end up working itself out. It's just, you can't have everything. You know, you go and you read all this stuff about the draft and just about every other one talks about how the Falcons don't have very many holes, you know, and it leaves you talking about the fullback position constantly. It's refreshing to see where the Falcons have come over the years from almost having the whole team being holes except for Julio and Matt Ryan to, you know, one or two backup players and a fullback, and who's going to be the start or the second string running back 2 years down the road. So it's crazy to see how quick he's turned it around.
Yes,
just through drafting.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, Zach, are there any other thoughts you want to share before we get out of here?
No, I had a great time talking to you. I will say I really enjoyed your Vic Beasley's potential at linebacker on Falc fans. I would definitely suggest anyone that loves reading about linebacker play and where Vic Beasley could be, check that out. I read that earlier this morning. It was really interesting.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I know there's certainly been a strong push that Vic Beasley going back to defensive end is going to do wonders for his career, which it might if he shows the development he needs to, but I still want to put it out there that I do think if the Falcons chose to develop his linebacker skill, they really do have a lot of untapped potential there at that spot as well. So we'll sort of see how his career plays out, whether it's in Atlanta or elsewhere. You know, I still think there's a lot of untapped potential with Vic Beasley there. I'm just not completely convinced that it's really as a pass rusher unless he can really make those strides, particularly this season. Because if, you know, 4 years in, if he still can't, if he still can't use his hands 4 years in, I don't know if we're really going to ever expect him to be able to use them. Even at least Jamal Anderson started using his hands by year three, you know. So, like, come on, Vic. You can do better than that.
There's hope.
Yeah. So, Zach, again, let the people know if they want to discuss more Falcons takes on Twitter with you, where they can find you at.
ATL Zach Jones, and also want to say thanks to Locked On Hawks too. you between you and Locked On Hawks, it saves my work journeys through the terrible Atlanta traffic.
Well, I'm glad to be of service. You know, I don't live in Atlanta, but I have visited there frequently for work over the last couple of years. And, you know, the ATL traffic is the, I don't know between LA, New York, DC, and Atlanta. I don't know who's worse, but, you know, top four definitely is not a top four yet you want to be in. It is terrible. So
I get it every day.
I'm glad to be of somewhat service.
For the days that you go 40 minutes. 40 minutes, because I'll be sitting in that traffic just, you know, when it runs out, you do the quick 20-minute ones. I'm sitting there with a broken radio for another 20 minutes. So I enjoy the long ones.
All right, man. I appreciate that. And I'll do my best.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Good talking to you.
All right, man. I hope to talk with you later this summer and into the season.
All right. Thanks, man. Go Falcons.
All right. Rise up. All right, guys. Another fan talk in the books. Appreciate Zach for coming on, chat with me. Zach was none other than the person that I had been talking about the last couple of weeks that I had basically flaked on last September, and finally had him on. And I appreciate Zach for being a good sport about that and not raking me over the coals with that. So if you guys want to be on the next Fan Talk, then by all means, send an email into lockedonfalcons@mail.com. We've got a bunch of other ones on deck. We should have at least another one next week. Should be recording that this weekend if all things go according to plan. Possibly another one during the middle of the week, as well as another one again the following weekend. So you definitely should have three or so over the next, 10, 12 days. And that would be something that we're going to continue to do as the summer progresses, to fill in this downtime for all of you guys that, you know, will not have summers off like your kids or your nieces and nephews, or do not have the luck of being an underpaid or poorly paid teacher and get your summers off or whatever the case may be. So we'll do that to fill in this time. We'll also be bringing in additional content. Tomorrow should be the Ito Smith scouting report to close out the week. And I haven't forgotten about getting additional people other than myself to come on and talk about some of these draft picks. We'll, you know, that's probably going to carry on into June, looking at the schedule right now, but just trying to coordinate schedules with people, and hopefully we can get those done in the month of June. Additionally, you can look forward to, probably we'll get into the positional previews towards the end of June and certainly in July on the lead up to training camp, just going position by position and talking about some of the key battles and whatnot. And one of the other things I want to do this summer as well is to talk about the other NFC South teams and have some people on from those teams to talk about those teams' off seasons and sort of what their season outlooks as well. And maybe if time allows, maybe have some people from other teams outside the division, maybe even the AFC North, since that's a division that we so rarely hear about. And it'll be interesting to sort of get some takes from those AFC North teams as well on this podcast. And so those are some of the things that you can look forward to this summer. But again, if you have additional suggestions for additional content that we can have on this Locked On Falcons podcast, by all means, you can email me again. That's lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can use Twitter at FalcFans is my Twitter handle. If it's podcast related, just indicate so in the tweet. However, if it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, you can find us on Facebook. Again, that's Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. And you can leave a comment at lockedonfalcons.com as well as falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So that's what you guys have to look forward to. I hope you guys appreciate it. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.